You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk, Entrepreneur Corner.
And joining us today is scenario planner, futurologist, keynote speaker, almost rock star back in his youth, and just a genuinely nice guy and one of your favorite and my favorite South Africans, Clem Santer. Haven't seen him in a while. Hello, Clem.
Eusebius, what a pleasure talking to you, and about a subject that's one of my favorites.
I know it is, and it's a subject that really is so important when we need to look everywhere for creative ideas. Entrepreneurship matters. Clem, let's get straight into it. I want to start slightly on a different note to the one that I know my team agreed on with you, but you are a dynamic speaker, so you'll handle it. I happened to be on Facebook the other day, and I saw someone writing a critique of the very idea of entrepreneurship and the emphasis that is currently being put on it. And I'm going to slightly lampoon what they said on Facebook, but you'll get the point. They were basically saying, entrepreneurship is all the rage, but actually, it doesn't deal with structural issues in our economy, economic injustices in our economy, the fact that you need so much resources, and we'll get to that in more granular detail in a couple of minutes. But I think what they were trying to suggest is that entrepreneurship, when we cloak it off its beautiful business language, is just a variation of that age-old right-wing idea that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps if only you put your mind to it.
Yeah, and Eusebius, let me give you what I consider my best example, not to dismiss those thoughts, but certainly to offer something different. In 2006, April of 2006, I was invited to the Central Party School, which is the inner sanctum of the Chinese Communist Party, just outside Beijing, because they wanted to understand scenario planning and how they could road test their five-year plans. And this school, which is the party's leadership academy, actually writes the five-year plans. And the president of China is actually the principal, and the vice principal runs the school. And they very seldom have foreigners. And we did the session on scenario planning. And then I was shown around the school. And in the classrooms, many of them, slogans of Mao Zedong had been taken down and replaced by slogans of Deng Xiaoping. And when I said to them, you know, why have you done this? They said, in 1978, when Deng succeeded Mao, we were the 100th ranked economy in the world. Now we're number 5, and of course now they're number 2. And they said there were two reasons for this economic miracle started by Deng. Number one was the huge emphasis on infrastructure in China, building new roads and bridges and airports and all those kind of things, and of course improving the education system. But the second thing that he did was unleash the Chinese talent for wealth creation, and in addition asked foreign companies to come in and provide examples and models of wealth creation. And for me, this was just very interesting that here you had the Communist Party of China basically saying that the economic miracle that they've had, and it is, I mean, there's nothing else in the world that has been like what China has done. And indeed, China is due to become the biggest economy in the world by 2050, ahead of America. And it's because they unleashed that spirit of wealth creation.
I suppose then the next question is, what do we do? Is the starting point that we do need to get serious about even making sure we get entrepreneurship into our schools, that we teach it? We can talk about what the content should be, but just in terms of public and also pedagogical emphasis, Clem, we are very state-centric. We want economic freedom in this country. But often when we approach some of the problems when it comes to low economic growth, high levels of unemployment, we tend to center the state in our conversations about what the solution space is.
Yeah, and that is true. The state actually has to play a very substantial role in changing this economy from a very exclusive economy, which it is, into a much more participative economy. And I feel very strongly that we need an economic Gedessa similar to the political Gedessas we had in the early 90s in order to achieve this, because people have to make real sacrifices for real gains. It's not a summit, a cozy little summit.
Yeah.
We need some very hard talk on, you know, how we're going to open up our economy for small businesses. And indeed, you're right about education. And one of the interesting things that Chantal Ilbrey, my co-author, and I are doing is introducing a course in a London private school called Growing Foxes,
yes.
which is going to run for 35 weeks in the afternoon at this school, and we'll see how it pans out. But it's basically not giving children just the sort of ability to run a small business, rather trying to open up their minds to more creative thinking on entrepreneurial lines.
We get lots of emails and people approaching us informally and say, please put us on your entrepreneurship slot, Eusebius. And it's often because they are desperate to access the goodies that they need to convert the ideas that they have into successful businesses that then can have a multiplier effect on employment and also on hopefully an upward trajectory when it comes to economic growth, Clem. But they struggle to access finance. They often don't have mentors from the sector that they wish to disrupt or enter competitively. How do we unlock entrepreneurship? It starts with mindset, but beyond mindset, unless I have the social capital, the financing, and all the other ingredients, it doesn't matter that I have an entrepreneurial mindset.
I agree, and that's why I want to have, you know, a really hard strategic debate with, as I said, proper negotiations on what has to be given and taken. Because, for example, on your very point of finance, I know how hard it is for small businesses to approach the banks at the moment and get the finance, because what the banks will say is that, you know, the risks are very high. The actual rewards in terms of the interest rates on the loans simply don't justify those risks being taken. And I feel that we've now got to overcome that. And if one of the outcomes of this Gedessa would be that banks have to form a joint sort of entrepreneurial bank so that the risk is shared, so be it. But we at the moment don't have the finances necessary for small business. But the second thing is, I think that each city in South Africa should have its own e-stock exchange in a sort of eBay type of site where the owner of a business can put up his business on the site, say, come out and visit me, look at my business, and if you like it, you can take a 20% interest in it for X amount of money. So that you start really using crowdfunding in a very direct way with small businesses. And so it's a completely different approach to what we have now, because here we have the JSE, which is very good for big businesses.
Yeah.
We have the banks, which obviously lend money to medium-sized and big business because the risks aren't too high. But we have nothing for the entrepreneurs. So I would like to have a set of hard initiatives like a joint bank for entrepreneurs, like local stock exchanges, and possibly every large company having to dedicate at least 20% of its supply chain
Absolutely.
To nurturing entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. Let's take a break there, Clem. I'm in conversation with Clem Sunter, the country's, well, arguably the best. I think he's probably the best. He's right up there, him and JP Luntman, scenario planner, futurologist, and a brilliant keynote speaker. And we're talking about what some of the drivers are to unlock entrepreneurship on a large scale. One can't be glib about what the barriers to entry are to someone sitting in a township who needs material in order to convert motivation and ideas into business. And so we're talking about this at a structural level, but also giving its due place in our discussion about how we're going to deal with inequity, with lack of opportunity to be participating in the economy. Have you got a question for Clem? Give us a call. We're with him until 11:30. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. You can also engage Clem if you are in Cape Town on the number 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk. Entrepreneur Corner.
1 minute after 11, if you've just joined us, we are in conversation with Clem Sunter, and we're talking about how to build an entrepreneurial economy, which is one that we need to do desperately, desperately quickly. Kiara Beale, well, good morning to you and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Isibis.
Yes, sir. What do you want to say?
I wanted to comment on Clem's case study on China. And I grossly disagree with him, because when you look at China as a case study, you have to take into account that there were gross human rights violations for them to get where they are. And something else we also have to put into the discussion is that they have 8 billion people as a population, whereas we're just about 50 million. So using China as a case study, I think we're not comparing apples with apples.
Okay, Clem, what do you say to that?
Yeah. I understand the differences, and believe me, I much prefer a democracy to the kind of the autocracy that there is in China. So, you know, I just hope that that is the next part of their evolution. But all I really wanted to point out was the fact that by liberating that potential for wealth creation in China, which in a sense is very paradoxical for a communist party to do, they created this economic miracle,
yeah,
which, for example, Russia hasn't. I mean,
yes,
Russia is still where it is because it never went that route. So it was purely to show that we've got to concentrate on that, on that magic formula,
yeah,
which will start to really get to people. And for example, the one thing in South Africa we have to do, because you were talking about township economies, Eusebius, we've got to have a serious conversation about how we stop the silos in our economy, that you have the townships economy and you have the mainstream economies. You've got to have one economy. And so we've got to have a serious discussion around that.
Yes, and on the first point about China, I mean, I understood you in the same way, not to take away from Kiara Beale's question, but there's maybe something we can footnote there for another occasion. When you learn lessons from case studies, it doesn't mean that you do not think there are salient differences between those societies.
Yeah.
Clem,
yeah,
on township economies, one of the difficulties is that, and I know Kenya is often overused as a case study that is positive on the next point. Pro-poor banking. How important is it, beyond the state, beyond the education curricula changing, that we also get our financial institutions, and not only the development finance institutions, they are important, like the IDC, but also our banks, to learn to take a chance and just find a way that makes business sense, but that is also, from a social point of view, sensible in coming to the party to help the so-called township entrepreneur that is now being anthropologized on a daily basis.
Yeah, and that has to be one very hard point of discussion, because I believe that it's either got to be a collective bank or it's got to be one of the banks breaking the ranks. But what we don't have is the institution. And to show how important it is, my example is the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, which has done a huge amount, particularly for female entrepreneurs in Bangladesh, for them to starting businesses. And we simply haven't got that mechanism here.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Randburg. Roger, good morning to you. Welcome to the conversation.
Morning, Eusebius. Morning, Tim. I've been thinking, you know, we should actually get together as a group of South African businessmen, black and white, and try and establish the Soweto Stock Exchange, even with funding from, let's say, the United States Union. And maybe we can start getting something going. It'll have to be, obviously, an incubation exchange initially. But once it gets going, then it's going to fly, I promise you. And that's going to help Soweto businessmen. It's going to help black South African entrepreneurs all over the show. And we can see what we can do. What do you think of that?
The answer is, I think that's a fantastic idea, because we simply haven't used the power of the internet. And, you know, eBay's shown us that if you get people really interested in, you know, buying stuff, and in this case it's shares rather than actual goods, you know, it'll change the game. And it shouldn't, you know, as I said, it's not just where, it's all the other major centers in South Africa. In other words, I believe in a bottom-up approach on the economy. We've got to put the things in place that you would have a popular revolution on the economy, and we don't have that. We still have a very exclusive established economy, and we're one of the most overmauled countries in the world. And it's not bad news, because you get world-class goods and services in those malls. But we've got to have a conversation about how we level the playing field.
A final question I wanted to tackle, Clem. What can big corporates and captains of industry do? Do they need to see entrepreneurs entering their sectors of the economy, whichever sector we might talk, whether it be anything from manufacturing to services in the financial sector, as potential threats to dismantling what often are oligopolies, quite frankly? Well, are there ways in which, without necessarily feeling threatened in terms of maximizing shareholder value, they can do their bit beyond the odd example here or there where they tend to pay lip service to enterprise development?
Yeah, you know, the example that I quoted when I did the original High Road, Low Road lectures in the mid-80s was Japan, and it has a dual logic economy. The first logic economy are the big world-class businesses. The second logic economy are all the component suppliers to those big businesses. And there's a very, very close connection between the two. And we need that form of dual logic economy. So, you know, there's just so many things that we should be discussing, which simply have not been discussed since we became a proper democracy.
100%.
And we need that. As I said, I don't want to call it a summit, because summits are nice, cozy little things. And this isn't a cozy thing, because we've got a huge problem to overcome, which is to get our economy into a more inclusive state.
Okay, Clem, you've been great. And that's exactly why you've been consistently advocating for an economic Odessa that is more than just talking shop. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Cheers. That is the wonderful Clem Sunter, an absolutely charismatic public speaker as well, by the way. Those of you who have seen him in action will know that, but also a scenario planner and also a futurologist. Thanks for his insights.